Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 297 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as usual. Today, my guest is John Strohmeyer. John is an attorney out of Houston, Texas, who runs Strohmeyer Law that provides trust and estate planning along with tax services to his clients. And John is a graduate, or maybe that's not the way to put it, but formerly spent some quality time working in the Four Seasons hotel business. And so he brings that Four Seasons client service mentality to his law firm. And we talk about what that means and how that manifests itself in his practice, as well as how it contributes to his own podcast called The Five-Star Counselor. And so it's a wide-ranging conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed having it with John. And so without any further delay, here is John Strohmeyer. John Strohmeyer, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us today, John. John, where are you calling in from? I forgot to ask you that.
I am calling in from swampy Houston, Texas.
Ah, okay. So the Lone Star State. Well, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So right now I am the proprietor of Strohmeyer Law PLLC in Houston. That's Houston. It's spelled with an H, but you don't actually need to pronounce it. I guide my clients through the maze of tax, estate planning, and probate law to help them leave no unfinished business. I've worked at a few different firms before I opened this firm almost 4 years ago. And between college and law school, I also spent 4 years working for the Four Seasons Hotels.
Ah, well, it's good employer to work with. Just, can anybody ever say anything bad about the Four Seasons?
You can. Things do go wrong there. I can assure you that. I was there long enough to see things, sometimes very bad things happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just a law of averages. That's a important thing to remember. And golly,
I'll tell you,
we as attorneys beat ourselves up for mistakes. Four Seasons makes mistakes every day.
I will tell you my favorite Four Seasons story with this, because it's just you and me. Nobody else is listening here. I checked into the Four Seasons for a conference in Chicago one time, and I was traveling with a terrible cold. And this is pre-COVID, so because you wouldn't even be allowed in the airport if you were sneezing and as sick as I was, but I was traveling with a terrible cold. I get to there, I'm checking in, and the socialist asked me how am I doing. So, well, to be honest with you, I'm not feeling well at all. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make this conference tomorrow morning. So, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, anyway, I go up to my room. About 30 minutes later, there's a knock on the door, and it's room service, and they're delivering hot chicken soup and a bag of cold medication. And I thought, okay, that's over and above.
Right.
I didn't ask for that, but I was really thankful for both the chicken noodle soup and the cold medication, because I had, some standard travel aspirin and stuff, but I was going to have to go out and get some other things, and they provided it all.
Yeah, and so here's the thing that I've seen so much, and it's, look, lawyers and doctors and accountants, you're familiar with the standard line, nobody taught us how to run a business in law school, in whatever our professional school is. And this is just as true for dentists as it is for lawyers. And so what this leads to, the downstream effect, is that as we go out and we start running our businesses, we glom on to the lessons. We say, oh, I liked it when Disney did this, or I love it when Four Seasons did that. The problem is not every lesson transfers exactly. Mm-hmm. So the thing to tease out here, this really was, it was a big deal for you, but it was basically free in terms of cost for the hotel. And it doesn't mean it's not special. I don't want to take away from it, because that was, I mean, that's five-star service. That is exactly what they should do. When I was at the hotel, that was the sort of thing you were trained to look out for. And so let's think about this. What happened? You checked in, the agent behind the desk just made the normal, hey, how are you, conversation, and you shared information that was useful. They said, oh, Mr. Tyra in room 1234 is not feeling so well. What can we do? And obviously, I've never worked the Four Seasons in Chicago. I will tell you right now, you're not the first guest to check in feeling under the weather. You won't be the last. But they had things that they could do that were, you know, basically zero cost to the hotel to make it better and easier for you. The soup, they did not make that from scratch just for you. That was,
of course not.
I mean, it was probably something that was available all the time anyway.
Yep.
The cold medications, you know, they just went to the sundries shop and grabbed a bag. And sure, it took some time. And, you know, there's the $5 hit to P&L because of materials used. But ultimately, it was recognition by the staff member. And that recognition by the staff member is free. It's training. And so, okay, John, you know, we kind of knew all of this. We could have thought through it. The lesson I don't want people to take, if you're running a law firm, you don't need to have chicken soup and cold medication on standby in your office. You know, sure, people are going to come in, but being kind of overwhelming, you know, like you are not set up to serve food in your office. Mm-hmm. Don't go to that end to try and replicate this. You've got to optimize for what your clients are dealing with and making it easy for them. If you start, you know, driving yourself in different directions, oh, well, you know, our clients may come in and they want, you know, diet lime fresca or some, you know, foolish beverage that we could just make up. You're going to have 55 refrigerators to be able to say, oh, well, of course we have, you know, strawberry fresca or Perrier with a twist of onion or something, you know, just nonsensical. Because it reminds me of a few years ago, I was at a conference. And we were talking about service. I was just in the audience, and the attorney who was talking was like, well, look, you know, if a guest, you know, client comes in and they ask for a drink, we run right out to the store and then we have that drink ready for them. You know, I was thinking, you know, certain product of a cow immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way that happens. And even at the Four Seasons, if somebody came in, we had all products from the Coke family. You know, C-O-K-E, not K-O-C-H, as our standard soft drinks. If somebody came in and asked for a Pepsi, I'm very sorry, would you accept a Coke? Would you accept something else? The Four Seasons wouldn't run out and grab just anything because you asked for it. It's what can you do that's reasonably within what we have right here? Because we can't be sending people to the grocery store just nonstop for every little thing. We don't have the way to do that. And so again, just focusing in on what do most of your clients want. You know, it's not some overwhelming experience. It's take care of them, make it easy.
Well, the thing I took away from it, and I did draw a lesson from it, I wrote a blog post about it, and I was certain that I made every effort to write an actual letter to the Four Seasons and cited the name of the desk attendant by name. But the thing I took away from it is that she listened. And she heard. And we as attorneys, oftentimes we're so focused on trying to get the message to the client and get the process started that we oftentimes overlook what the client is saying and frequently don't read between the lines to, even if we hear the words, we're not really understanding what they're meaning. And so that was the lesson I took away from it and to this day.
Right. I would agree with that. It's not just get you checked in, get you keys, get your credit card information and a signature. It's you're coming to the hotel for rest, relaxation when you're not at the conference? How can we make sure that you are better able to take care of whatever you need to take care of? When I was still at the Four Seasons, and I worked at the Four Seasons in Austin for almost 4 years, most of it was in management. The hotel manager, or the hotel general manager, so the person at the top oversaw everything, his phrase was, look, by coming here, we're going to save you time and help you make you more money. Why? We were going to take care of things and you didn't have to worry about it. So primarily, that hotel was not a resort. It was mostly there for business. We were busy on, you know, Sunday night through Thursday night. We had some weekend, it would get busy on the weekends, but primarily we were a business hotel. And that was the focus. You know, we're going to save you time so you can go out and, you know, the make more money is you're here for business. We're going to make it easy so that you can get your job done. You know, he could have said it a dozen other ways. So if anybody's like, well, I don't want to make them more money. Like, I get it. You know, we don't need to nitpick everything on that. But really, it's we're focusing on getting you more time back because that's the point. You want to enjoy your time here. And whether it's, you know, sitting by the pool drinking daiquiris or having that conference run smoothly, it was all about how do we save you time so you don't have to think about, well, when is the room service going to be here? Or, you know, when are my bags going to get to the room?
Well, let's circle back around now, having dissected the Four Seasons experience to death here. Let's circle back around and talk about how you came to be the proprietor of your own law firm. When you came out of law school, did you go work for other firms or did you go straight into solo practice?
I came very, very close to going straight into solo practice and not by choice. So I graduated law school in 2009, got my LLM in tax in 2010. Listeners probably are aware that that was not a great time to come out of law school.
Yeah.
And I managed to find, I ended up getting two offers out of law school. They didn't really come until March of 2010. So months before I was getting ready to graduate, not the traditional or formerly traditional, have your offer in hand by the time you're done with your 2L summer. And I went to work for a small firm in Austin. There was four partners, three associates, including me. I was there for about 3 years. And then it was time for my wife, girlfriend at the time, now wife, for us to move back home to Houston, where we both had grown up. And I was at a big firm here in town for a while. The numbers there didn't work out the way they mm-hmm. should have. I transitioned from a big firm down to a, you know, smaller 26 attorney firm, did work there for about 3 years before deciding, you know what, I think I've got some ideas on how to run my firm. So I made the leap in April of 2018.
Great. So now you've been at it a couple, almost 3 years here. What have been some of your challenges? Some of the things you're most proud of, some of the things that you wish you could have done differently.
Oh, goodness. Well, challenges, it seems like every day is a new challenge. There are so many things you have to keep up in the air. And at this point, finding the way to get more things that I shouldn't be doing off my plate and done in a consistent manner so that I can focus more on the clients, focus more on the higher end problems that clients are coming to us to solve. But you know, one of the biggest things I got off my desk was weekly IOLTA reconciliation.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something where, look, my license is tied to IOLTA. If we're off on that, that's a problem. But at the end of the week, you know, we need to be going through, making sure credit card receipts line up with what's in Clio and on and on. I don't need to be doing everything in there. I have retained the power in our bank accounts. I'm the only one who can transfer funds in or out of IOLTA. And that's just, you know, for me, I'm not giving that one up.
No, That's a smart practice. Smart to do.
Right. But I have an internal bookkeeper. The first thing he does on Monday mornings, reconciling the prior week, which means we're turning funds over and we're checking it all the time. We've built out an Excel spreadsheet that allows us to track things on a quarterly basis and then week by week, which for me, you know, normally people say, oh, we'll do month to month reporting and figure out how things go. The problem is, you know, every month is different, you know, different numbers of days, holidays, and somebody's going to take this off. But getting into a weekly rhythm makes it much easier because there's, who's his name? It's Mark Horseman of the Manager Tools podcast calls it Horseman's Law of Management. If you only do something once a year, you're not going to be very good at it. But if you do it all the time, you're going to get really good really quick. So think about how much effort and how much of a production Christmas or Thanksgiving can be. If you had to do that sort of meal every week, you would get that dialed in very quickly and to where it would not be such a big issue. And that's where we got with Iolta. We've kind of dialed things in. Bill, my internal bookkeeper, knows what to do. We've ironed out at this point pretty much all of the weird edge cases that show up. You know, oh, we had to refund this or we had to do that. We had, you know, it's very rare that I get asked questions. And at the end of the day, you know, at the end of a Monday, I'll have several reports that I can look at. I can double check everything. He's printed out and then scanned all of the reports. It has his tick marks as he's gone through and made sure that the amount on the piece of paper is in Excel and it's there for me. The transfer notes for our bank account are automatically generated in Excel so that it'll say, you know, like the end of the week, the day of the transfer, the invoice number, the client identification number, and the amount. So all I have to do is just copy and paste that from an Excel file into our bank transfer. And it's something that ends up taking me, you know, it used to take me 3 or 4 hours to get it done. And now it's only taking about 15 minutes once a week for me.
Yeah. I think it's a really smart idea because trying to do that on a monthly basis, pretty soon you're dealing with a really significant volume of transactions. And the older they are, the harder it is to go back and kind of figure out if there's a problem. So,
Right.
I agree with you. I reconcile mine every week. And frankly, I double check it. I have a reminder to check my old Iolta account every 3 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's not reconcile it, but it's just to look at the account, make sure that the transactions that I expect to see in there are in there. I make sure that for my active clients that their sub-trust accounts are properly credited, because sometimes when that money comes into the trust account in QuickBooks, it comes into the main account, and I need to then change that to make sure it's in the client sub-trust account. So I do that every 3 days. So I agree with you. You do it on a regular basis. It's a smaller volume of transactions. You get really good and quick at it.
Right.
It just makes your life a lot easier. So when you started, you jumped into solo practice. Had that been in the back of your mind for some time, or did you ever or never think of yourself as potentially going into practice for yourself? Or
yeah, so I had, because of the market in 2009 and 2010, I was faced with the reality of getting out of my LLM program and going right into law offices of John Strohmeyer in 2010. So while I was still in my LLM program, I read Funberg's book cover to cover. I read Carolyn Elephant's book cover to cover.
Very good friend of mine, Carolyn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, both of those were just so helpful to start thinking about this before I even got out on my own. I mean, or before I even got on my own, before I had my first legal job, getting some of those lessons trained into me because I was really ready to go be my own boss straight out of law school. And I'm very glad that did not happen. I benefited from mentorship over the 10-ish years, 9-ish years, whatever it was before I jumped out on my own. And it really was a big help to have that. And so I was working for these three different firms, getting experience, getting things up and going. And I could see the pieces. And I really had finally made the decision, okay, it's time for me to start my own thing, kind of brushing up against some of the, how do you phrase this? Brushing up against the ceiling of, well, I want to do it this way, and the partners are saying no.
Right.
One of the—
The politics of the office.
Right.
I find it interesting that you went from big law to medium-sized law to smaller law to solo.
It was tiny law to whatever you want to call a 100-lawyer firm.
I call that
back to 26. Yeah. So Tiny, big, medium, solo.
Right.
Right.
That was a nice journey. When you started your practice, did you go into a physical space or were you running it from the kitchen table or how were you set up when you went into solo practice?
So I got a spot at Spaces, which is the kind of newer, hipper imprint of Regis. I am still in a Regis office. I've upgraded the space, but I've stayed there. As an estate planning practice, I need a place where clients can come to sign documents. We need a place to store things. That was never going to be my house. So while I do work from home 3-ish days per week, you know, today's a day I'm in the office. We've got clients coming in for meetings. Tomorrow we'll, let's see, tomorrow is Friday. I won't have any meetings in the office, but we will have some of the staff in the office doing normal staff things. But I will be going out to meet with a client at their house to sign documents. And it's just good to not have the home address down as the address.
Yeah. I always tell folks, even if you're working from the kitchen table, find a different way to have a different address.
Right. It just, it gives some separation. It's really nice to be able to leave the house and come here. Even in COVID, because of the way things are set up here, I could still come to the office, shut the door. I'm effectively alone if I needed to be.
Yeah.
It's a nice separation.
And I'm essentially set up the same way in Regis facility. And I work primarily from home, but I go in to meet clients. We do signings in the office and that kind of thing. And if I have to be in court, which is fewer and fewer days these days, you know, my office is pretty close to the courthouse and that makes it easy.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works, and we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and it's changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity with quality, evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. So tell us a little bit about your staffing, John. How are you set up to provide the services that you do?
So right now, there are, seven of us here at the firm. I'm name on the door. I'm primary attorney. I have a first-year associate who works for me. So she is, she had worked for me as a law student for almost a year and a half, which was great. And I found that's been a great way of finding talent is going to law schools and finding the people who, look, I'm not going to treat you like big law. I don't want to. Downside is I'm not going to pay you like big law either. But for the folks who are interested in trust and estates and tax practice, that's okay. We can tailor our ask to law students and find really good interns. And we're getting them work earlier on, So Kimmy is my associate. She's been with me almost 2 years now, but she started off as an intern and she was doing the small projects, learning how we work, learning the rhythm here, 10 hours a week, getting trained up, knowing who everybody was so that when she started for real in August, it wasn't like she was walking in brand new. She knew where things were, kind of knew what things needed to happen and what to look for. And so we've got a 3L right now. She comes back to the office next week after the exams are done, and she'll be working 20 hours a week from mid-December until she pops out for exams in May. And the real purpose is, all right, you're not going to just be doing little projects here and there. The purpose is you're going to be graduating in May. You're going to take the bar in July. And this time next year, you should be working here. So you're just going to, throw work at her, treat her like a paralegal would be treated. You're doing first cut on drafts and everything that she should be, she should do so that she knows what to look for. It's less orientation. And now it's, really cost-effective training for me because I'm not paying her as an associate to learn the basics of what we do. I'm paying her as an intern and getting her up to speed. So it's useful experience for her.
I find that to be a very appropriate model. The boutique law firm that I went to work for straight out of law school, the partner there, Tom Simeone, who in fact was my very first guest on this podcast. We still have a great relationship. Tom followed the same process. He had undergrad interns and then law school interns. And there was a graduated level of responsibility and pay for both of them, such that by the time they finished law school, they were fully versed in the operations of the office and they could step in once they passed the bar and start executing as an associate attorney. That was the expectation. And the good value or the good aspect of that process, if you can adopt it in your law firm, is that if things aren't working out, you can make a change at the undergrad level or at the law school level, and it's far less disruptive than if you find hiring a associate blindly and things aren't working out. It's more difficult to make those changes.
Oh, absolutely.
That seems self-evident, but you'd be surprised, or I'm surprised, by how many times people say, "Oh, I hadn't thought of that."
It's stumbling back into the apprentice model, which is just a great way of saying, look, here, this is what we're going to do. We get a chance to see you work. Do you interact well with us? People leave. I would love to think that every employee is going to stay with me forever. But the reality is, and look, I know it from my own career. I switch jobs every 3 or so years. And about at this point, running this law firm is the longest job I've had, or I'm probably within days of beating out my career at the Four Seasons, but it's the longest legal job I've had for certain. And that's just the reality.
I had this conversation with a more seasoned attorney. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, well, it's really how law was done back in the day. You had an apprentice. You had somebody who worked in the office and quote, read for the bar. Right. And they didn't really go to law school. They learned as an apprentice. And you guided them into what additional treatises and cases they were to read, and such that they'd be prepared to take what was more an open-ended essay exam back in, and I'm talking, you know, turn of the century days, not
right,
last week. But I thought that's kind of interesting that the correlation between how law used to be practiced and how it can be practiced with the use of interns and as such as a staffing issue is very, very similar. It's just different kind of naming, you know?
Right. And, you know, just thinking about it now, our firm is specialized in tax and estate planning and probate work. We only do a certain number of things. So coming up with the list of tasks. And so for Kimmy, she's been here for 2 years, but we've got a client coming back who needs to terminate an LLC. And I know she hasn't dealt with one of those before. It's not a complicated process, but this is the chance to kind of go back and revisit our process on this, make sure we've got all the forms and instructions updated, not only on our internal side, but what are we telling to the clients? Does Kimmy, as the new associate, understand the pieces and the logic behind what happens in the process? You know, why does the state of Texas require that you file a certificate of tax compliance? There's a reason for it. It's not just they're tossing paperwork at you to toss paperwork at you. Why are they thinking about that? And kind of what does that tell you about how everything else should be working in the law, in how we do things? It, you know, kind of search for those bigger trends.
It brings up an interesting question. How do you handle training in your law firm? Do you have a policies and procedures manual? Is it written? Are you taking advantage of video? How do you address the issue of training?
So training comes down. I'm getting better at it. We have policies and procedures. It is built into Basecamp for us. And right now, one of my guys is, you know, the internal bookkeeper. He also does a lot of work on the probate inventories. Yep. Things tend to line up well that way. And he's the person where I can hand things off. What I thought were very complete IOLTA reconciliation instructions to, and then he doubled the steps because there were lots of things that I was just doing in my head.
Right.
His job is every week, you know, he needs to get one done for our interns, getting them to produce procedures. They don't have to be over the top perfect instructions, but they've got to be close enough that anybody can pick it up and know roughly what you're supposed to do. We can always come back and add to it, but let's not make the perfect the enemy of the good. So that's one way we're doing it. What I've also started doing is I realized, look, we've got a YouTube channel where I'm explaining things to clients and potential clients. This is a great chance for me to say, staff, I'm going to be explaining this topic this week. What questions do you have about this? What questions have you been asked about this in the last week? Because that way I can start filtering those questions in. And then we're doing weekly live streams at this point on YouTube where I'm going to go in and explain it to clients. And then at the end of it, you know, once we turn the cameras off, I can do the 5 minutes on, you should look for this file here, or, you know, the things that a client wouldn't need to know, but somebody working here will need to know. And that way, you know, they're hearing me say it. It's not just all crammed up in my head. It's how can I get this information out? And so if Bill, the bookkeeper, or Brad, my operations guy, Bobby, my marketing guy, they're hearing it, and as they hear it, they know parts of it, and they don't need to have all of the answers, but if they at least recognize these pieces, that's going to help them say, oh, okay, well, I know we've done this before. I don't want to give you an answer. This is something that John or Kimmy is going to have to address with you, but I know this is something that I recognize.
Have you considered creating a second channel for staff only, internal, and use that as a vehicle for providing training videos?
I have not. Only, you know, just one channel is enough right now.
Well, what I like is that you've adopted a process that I've advocated on this program before, whereas we ask the employees to document what they're doing and be responsible for developing the procedures and policy drafts that govern their job. And I've always said, I want you to write it as if you were trying to tell your successor how you are doing your job. And we make that part of their review process. You know, how well have you developed the policies and procedures specific to your efforts here at the law firm? And then it's an easy transition, if you think about it, to take that and do a quick video and post the video on an internal channel. And it's just a thought that some people, you know, might find useful.
Definitely.
Let's roll back. There was something you said that I wanted to touch base on, too, about the role that technology plays in your law firm. You use Basecamp. I know you use Clio. Tell me a little bit about your tech stack and how that's come to be a part of your environment.
Sure. So Clio, Basecamp for project management, we're slowly moving all of our internal communications to Basecamp. We have a few clients who use Basecamp as well. So it's a way for them to be in on our process as well. I use Citrix ShareFile for document storage, LawPay for credit card processing, Microsoft Office for Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook. Text Expander is one of my favorite tools. I use that every day, and it is great seeing, you know, how many hours a month it saves me in typing. It's one of the best things that I pay for.
Text Expander is getting so robust these days with conditional branching and, you know, the ability to do pull downs and you know, button selections, and just it's really remarkable. And embedding it as one snippet inside a nested another. I mean, it's you can create all this logical processing in Text Expander, and it just can save you an enormous amount of time. And for an estate attorney, I suspect when you're adding clauses to various documents, do you use Text Expander in that role?
We use it for a few things. We're slowly moving into after pattern for document creation. Okay. So the Text Expander, we have it for a few phrases that are things that we just don't want to leave in a document, in the skeleton document, because it doesn't show up enough, but we know how to go and grab that when we need it.
Okay. All that sounds great. And do you have somebody dedicated in the office to kind of oversee all of that, or is everybody kind of sharing that responsibility?
A little of column A, a little of column B. I do have Brad, who is my operations guy. So he takes over all the projects where I would love to fiddle and tinker with things all the time, but
if he's
the
one. If left to your own devices.
Right. But I've learned, look, I can't be the guy who is fiddling in Zapier all day long because it's fun for me. I would love to do that, but I need to solve bigger problems. Brad can take care of that. He's the one who's, you know, got us integrated in, you know, integrated Pipedrive and Typeform into Basecamp so that things appear in all the right places when we're doing intake. Yep. And so there's that. But then Text Expander, everybody's got a subscription to that in the office. So, you know, just talking to Bobby, my marketing guy and intake chief, hey, you know, here's the email that I send. You know, the Text Expander code is #UN. So for, you know, it's an email that we're sending. It's strike one, but they were unresponsive. And so, dear so-and-so, we logged into the call, we tried you, texted you, you didn't respond. Hey, things get busy. And, you know, the standard language we have of, here, this is what you should send.
It saves an enormous amount of time of having to rewrite that every time you have to send it.
Right. And now, you know, because we've written that once, if Bobby needs to tweak it for his verbiage, you know, just sometimes I'm writing things as John, not as somebody who is working in Strohmeyer Law.
Right.
Well, here we can have that option, whether it's add as a dropdown or add it as, you know, Bobby's strike one.
Yeah. Well, let's spend our last few minutes here talking about the $64,000 question that most people have to deal with as the owner of a law firm. How do you get new clients?
Most of my clients come by referrals, though we are seeing more and more cold calls come in, which both are good. As an estate planner, most of my referrals come from either CPAs, financial advisors, or other non-estate planning attorneys. We want to take care of those folks. And we also don't want to have all of our eggs in just one basket. Things change. We want to take care of all of our referral sources. But I'm the nervous guy who doesn't want, what happens if somebody has a heart attack or whatever it is, and then that group of clients just disappears.
What do you do systemically to cultivate those referrals?
A few things. We know who our, top 10 leaders are in estate plan or in referrals.
Yep.
We do the estate planning. We send out little gifts to people. This is, I think it's a mistake to send gifts to clients because they're not hiring you for that. But sending out things to make sure that some of our referral sources know that we're thinking about them.
Right. Staying top of mind, that kind of thing. So you have a systemic approach to that. It's just not ad hoc.
Right. And so, one of my big referral sources is the law firm that's literally right above me. They don't need necessarily for me to sponsor a happy hour, but making sure they've got the quick answers. How can I make sure that those, 30 or so lawyers right above me know if you've got a question, you can just call me. I will give you kind of the quick answer so you're at least prepared for that. If I need to get involved, I will tell you I need to get involved, or we'll get you to the right place. A lot of times, because I do tax work, people think, John, what's the tax answer to this? And the answer is, it doesn't matter what I think. What does your CPA say? Because it doesn't matter what I think about it. I'm not the one who's going to be signing your 1040 next year.
And that one answer fits all questions.
Yes.
So let's wrap up here. Our last question. Do you have one or two ideas about things you wish you would have done differently or mistakes that you've made that you wish you could have avoided and maybe help others avoid doing the same? Does anything come to mind?
Oh, sure. So going back to that gift idea, this is a mistake I made early on thinking, we need to send over these over-the-top gifts to clients and potential clients because, that'll make sure they show up here.
Right.
And right after I started, I knew one potential client who was only going to be worth about $2,500 for a small estate plan. I knew they were having their second child, and my sister has a small side business where she embroiders placemats with everybody in the family's name. Uh-huh. It's like, I'm going to send send this to her. I get to support my sister, send something. Like, there's no way these people would go anywhere else. No way. Not a chance. Well, I'm telling this in the mistake section because I spent time and money on that effort and then they went somewhere else. And that's the thing. Nobody hires a lawyer or a doctor or a dentist thinking, golly, I hope they buy me a gift. It doesn't mean don't take care of them, but it certainly means don't waste resources on gifts because, you're generally not going to know enough about the person to know what they want or what they don't want. I like to cook, but if somebody gets me a chef's knife, I'm going to be upset. It's going to be wasted on me because I have a very specific knife that I bought after looking around for a while. And so I'm going to have this chef knife that I don't need from somebody who meant well. And, hopefully they haven't engraved it because then I can at least do something else with it. But, I went out and I spent some good money on a very specific chef knife. And if somebody were to get me a replacement one, it's like, thanks, but now what do I do with this thing I'm almost certainly never going to use? You've got to know the person very well to get them a gift that will actually matter to them. And the other side of it is, don't just be tossing out $5 Starbucks gift cards because how do you know the person likes Starbucks or coffee or whatever?
Yeah. I just got through at a conference, and I'll give a shout out to him, the Chris Summit in Atlanta a few weeks ago. And John Rulin was one of the keynote speakers. He wrote the book Giftology. And it's a very interesting book. You can read it in short order. I think people take some of the tenets of the book out of context and they do exactly what you're saying. They kind of overdo it in the wrong areas. So you need to be strategic in your application of that kind of approach. So
exactly. Well, listen,
John, this has been terrific. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. I want to make sure we also mention your own podcast. Tell us a little bit about the Five Star Counselor, is it?
Five Star Council podcast. Yes. So I had this first career working for the Four Seasons Hotels, almost 3 years in management there. And there are a lot of lessons, a lot of things that I've picked up. And I share that on the Five Star Council podcast. So this is where we get into, well, really trying to answer the question, what would a law firm built by the founders of Disney, Four Seasons, Amazon, and Zappos look like? Every week, primarily interview program, but we're talking to people about how can we operationalize better service to make it easier for attorneys to take better care of their clients. So, well, I think, Neil, we've already sent you a link to episode 66 of our podcast. It's a recent episode where we go through, you know, here's how we're thinking about things. This is kind of the framework around what we do.
Well, we will have that link in our show notes, along with a link to your law firm. So if people want to get a hold of you through your website regarding anything that they may want to follow up on, they can do so there. And so, John, I just want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us today as a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, it was great to be here.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.